Welcome, everybody. My name is Robert Phelps with Creative IT. I'm here with Evan Taylor of NFP and wanted to get together today and talk with Evan, who's a risk consultant with NFP, about the landscape of cybersecurity and what he's seeing. Evan, thank you very much for joining me today.
Yeah, good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Why don't you take a minute or two and just kind of explain what you do for NFP and your background?
Yeah, so I'm a risk consultant with NFP, but NFP is a commercial insurance brokerage agency, and we do employee health benefits, property and casualty insurance, which includes cyber liability insurance, which is what we're talking about today, retirement, 401k advisory work for mainly middle market firms all over the U.S. So we're headquartered out of New York, but in Charlotte, North Carolina is where we're located for the Southeast. So yeah, what do I do specifically for them? So I'm in our property and casualty insurance group, which that would consist of general liability and workers' comp and commercial auto fleets and professional liability. But as a part of that risk consulting practice, we offer cyber liability insurance for organizations. And so we're constantly having conversations with companies that are concerned about data breaches and how to mitigate that risk and frankly, transfer the risk to insurance companies. And so those are the services that we offer to walk them through that insurance process.
Yeah, and that's really why I wanted to sit down and talk with you, because it fascinates. And I'm sure that's been a kind of a growing thing. Have you seen that it's been growing over the past year or so?
Yeah, definitely has grown with the additional publicity from other breaches like Equifax and just consistent news of breaches that are coming out. We're definitely getting renewed interest and continued interest from the market, and companies are constantly curious about how they can, what are the steps they can take to protect themselves. So definitely a lot of interest kind of throughout the market, from small business all the way to large enterprises.
And so tell me a little about your background and kind of what made you interested in cyber crime and cyber liability.
Yeah, so my background, I was with the FBI for about 6 years and did counterintelligence and cyber investigations, and was seeing a lot of the breach activity that was happening and meeting with companies that were, you know, likewise concerned about their exposure, and wanted to get out of government just to stay local, and had heard about cyber liability insurance. So just did a bunch of research and talked to a bunch of folks, and the more I talked to people in the insurance industry, the more interested I was in it, and got an opportunity to come on board with NFP, and fantastic organization with a ton of name recognition and sort of national group, and got a ton of resources. Have really, you know, we do a ton of different things, but the cyber liability piece has been a really fun way to help companies in a time where there's a ton of exposure out there.
Explain that a little bit for me as far as the cyber insurance, the cyber liability insurance. Why would a company reach out to you? What sparks that? And kind of explain what that protects, how that can protect a business.
Yeah, that's a great question. So companies are reaching out to us if it's specifically around cyber liability insurance. So they're reaching out to us, you know, a lot of times they're having vendors that will push contractual obligations that they have the insurance on to the client. But we often see that companies are hearing about it from competitors, they're hearing about it from industry trade groups, but for whatever reason they come to us, either they're being forced to purchase it or they just know that they're at risk and they want to find ways to transfer that risk. And so when they come to us, we sort of explain how the product works. As a general rule of thumb, cyber liability insurance is intended to do is it's a conduit to the services that you're going to need immediately following a breach. And so after a breach, what happens is you're either notified internally or externally. So your IT director will say we have a problem, or the bureau will come knocking on your door and tell you have a problem. And when that happens, a few things kick off from a cost and resource standpoint. So you have to hire typically a digital forensic incident response group to come in, and they're really sort of the cops that parachute in, not literally government cops, but third-party vendors that come in, they swoop in, they take care of the problem. They tell you the scope of the breach, what was found, what was stolen, are the attackers still in the network? They just kind of give you a sense of how bad the issue was. They tell you how many victims there were, whose records were stolen, and as a result, there'll be legal implications and financial implications. So if you have 1,000 credit card records that are stolen from a donor database at a nonprofit or from some sort of point of sale file or email server, whatever the case is, if you have data that's stolen on actual individuals, victims, you have to notify those victims by state law. And so 48 states in the U.S. have got state breach notification laws that are all different, and they all have different requirements as to how soon you need to notify the victim. What do you need to provide them? Credit monitoring services? Is it for a year or 2 years, or how long do you have to provide those services? There will be implications when the digital forensic group tells you how bad the breach was, and you'll have some legal requirements that you have to comply with. And so that outsourced legal assistance from data breach attorneys that do that all day, every day, that's also insured by the product. If you're a large enough organization, you may begin to think about, well, we need to disclose this to the public because there could be reputational risk issues if we hold on to this information too long. There's certain risks in disclosing it too soon if you don't have all the information. There's also certain risk if you disclose too late that it may look like you've been sitting on the information and not telling your customers. And so the insurance product is meant to provide you a data breach coach, a PR consultant that has been through many, many breaches and will walk you through the process on should you disclose it, should you not disclose it, when should you disclose it, and how should you go about doing that to minimize the damage to your company. So those are some of the first-party costs. They're the direct costs the company incurs immediately after a breach. Then you have long-term costs. So these are typically third-party costs to the company. If you lose those 1,000 credit card records and you have a PCI fine levied against the company 10 months later, that would be a third-party cost for PCI fines and assessments. If you have some sort of regulatory body that levies a fine or an assessment against you, that's a third-party cost. There's a whole host of third-party costs long-term. If you have a class action lawsuit, for instance, if all 1,000 of those customers that hold those credit cards join together and they form a class action suit against the company, that would be a third-party cost of defending that claim. So it's meant to be a sort of overarching theme, going back to where we started, a conduit to the services a company needs immediately following a breach, and it transfers that risk to the insurance company.
So much like auto insurance after you get in a car accident.
Exactly right, yep.
So what threats, you know, these companies that are coming to you and looking for cyber insurance, they're obviously not just coming to spend money. They're coming to look to mitigate their risk, but there's got to be some sort of risk that's out there for them to be coming to you. What are you seeing as far as what are the threats that they're trying to protect themselves against and mitigate the risk of?
Companies are coming to us for a lot of different reasons, and it depends on what they do. So I'll give you a few different instances. I think that really the take-home message is the cybersecurity threats are advanced, persistent actors that have been hacking U.S. businesses of all shapes and sizes for years and years. And it's not slowing down. It's not stopping. And the attackers are getting more creative in how they conduct their breaches. And they're just as persistent as they were 10 years ago, if not more. It's a very profitable business for hackers, and it's not going to stop. But, you know, folks come to us for a myriad of different reasons depending on what they do. So, for instance, manufacturing, they might have a ton of customer data because they manufacture widgets for companies all over the world, and so they may have a ton of customer data. They may have wiring information on those customers. They may have supplier financial information because they have to buy supplies from all their supplier networks. They may have simply, you know, they may be advanced manufacturers that have all of their manufacturing equipment connected to a central network so that it's the most efficient, you know, run manufacturing plant. Well, that can be compromised. We've seen that with customers where their manufacturing equipment is compromised by a breach and it is brought to a standstill by a hacker, and the hacker will demand an extortion payment in order to give them access back to the manufacturing equipment. And so, you know, if that happens in a really advanced manufacturing setting, if a company makes $50,000 or $100,000 or $150,000 in revenue a day on their widgets, that can, you know, 3-4 days of that can have very, very serious financial results. So, again, that business interruption, the business income loss, is insurable by the insurance product. But
wow.
Then you take a nonprofit. A nonprofit doesn't have the same risk that a manufacturing company does, but if they're a sizable nonprofit, they've got a donor database that very frequently in the nonprofit sector is not protected, it's not encrypted, and the information in it is widely available to those that work for the nonprofit. And so an attacker can easily take that and use it to their advantage. They can either use it to conduct fraud against the donors, or they can use it to extort the nonprofit itself, saying you give us an extortion payment and we'll give you your data back, or we'll disclose to the donor database and ruin your reputation for those that give you the money you need to run your nonprofit. So, you know, whether you're talking about nonprofits, for-profits, manufacturing, construction, it really does not matter. If you have any connection to the internet in your business, attackers have proven that they will use it to monetize a breach. So, and the big thing, they want access to a network that they can monetize, or they want the data that's on that network. And they can use either, you know, I hear a lot of companies say, we don't have any data that's of value. And the hackers have proven time and time again that they don't need data that's valuable. They simply need access to your network, and they can monetize that access. So they can encrypt what's on that network, either a portion of the network, a segment, or the entire network, a certain server on the network that they know is critical to your business, and then demand an extortion payment to let you back in. And the nuisance of that is what they know that they're targeting, because they know you're going to pay to get access back to your network. So
I'm sure, because like you said, with a big manufacturing, there, you know, it could be hundreds of thousands a day, but it's all on scale. If it's a smaller business who's, you know, making $5,000 a day, still an interruption to that business is not good.
Yeah, yes, it's not good. So yeah, I hear a lot of companies that when we start talking about if they don't have cyber liability insurance, they will say, well, isn't this already covered? And so I hear that almost daily, just to discuss that. So products in the commercial insurance business that have in some ways tried to cover cyber breaches, you know, commercial general liability, directors and officers coverage, commercial crime coverage, these all have very intended specific uses, which we could discuss at length on each of them, which is we don't need to do that. But the carriers have made very intentional efforts as a general rule of thumb to exclude data breaches from these main lines of commercial insurance coverage. And they've done that because the risk is so great from a cyber breach that the market is forcing buyers, they're forcing companies as a whole to purchase standalone coverage. And so if companies are not in the market and they don't have standalone cyber liability coverage and they're expecting or they're assuming that their existing program is covering that, I would caution them and tell them to quickly address it, get with their broker, figure out what they have in place, what do they need to get in place, because more often than not, there's going to be a very big exclusion page, you know, 80 pages into their policy that will show them that the carrier doesn't intend to cover a data breach.
So essentially, for really any business, they need to look at their policy. They need to measure the risk of, if our business was attacked, do we have, you know, patient information or customer information, or even what's the cost of our day in, day out business if we were to go and you know, be compromised and be held hostage for a couple
of
days.
That's exactly right. And the applications that we, you know, this is not a standard line of insurance. And so the last report I heard is there are about 130 carriers that are in the market. There's a handful that are out there that are extremely reputable. They've been in the market a long time. They've not left after really big breaches and gotten out of the market. And each carrier is different in terms of the application that they have, what types of businesses they like to insure, what types of businesses they don't like to insure from a cyber standpoint. They all have different terminology for what they call the same thing. So some people may call it a phishing email. Some people may call it a spear phishing email. Some people may call it data security liability, some they call it network liability. Knowing the ins and outs of the forms and what's covered, what's not covered, that's where it can get a little tricky if you're not in the industry every day and reading all the forms every day, the fun part of insurance. But if they're working with a broker that's in that space, they can trust them to get them through it. So.
Well, that's good to know. And really kind of a question would be, relating this to other insurance policies, does it work, I'll relate it to like a homeowner's insurance, the more security essentials and protocols that they have in place to protect the business from a cyber liability claim, does that lower the policy cost? Does that work similar to like a homeowner's insurance with a security system?
Yeah, so if we ever get an application back from a client that is really bare bones and they just answered yes, no, there's no context, and on the questions that maybe don't have the best answer, there's no context given or no details, If we don't understand that, it's going to be a very rough marketing process, because obviously the carriers are underwriting what they see on paper. So we really, our job is we have very personal relationships with our clients, and we really want to know the ins and outs about their concerns, what keeps them up at night around cybersecurity risk and all risks, and then what they're doing to address it. And we help them. We walk them through that application process. We want a realistic understanding of where they are in their business. We want to understand the technology, maybe the technology voids, maybe where they're working and investing in technology. We want to understand their people. Where do they maybe need to invest a little more in training of their people around data breaches? And we want to understand the process. So if you do wire transfers, how are you controlling and putting risk controls in place to prevent actors from compromising that process and wiring money, you know, nefariously to a hacker that's out there? So we walk through them through that process, but the more context that can be provided, the better, just from a pricing and coverage standpoint.
So really, someone like an IT manager as well as CFO would be involved in that process. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. So the application part of applying for the coverage, it's not the same as it would be like if you were doing a commercial auto fleet or a commercial general liability form. It is going to involve a couple different parties within a company. For companies that maybe outsource their IT needs, you're going to have to get with your managed services provider, and they're going to have to do things like help you quantify the data that's on your network, what types of data are on the network. They're going to want to understand how many payment card records do you hold in your network, how many HIPAA-governed records do you hold in your network, how many personally identifiable records, so names and socials or names and dates of birth. I mean, that's the stuff they're going to want to quantify, because that's how they rate, you know, the premium more often than not. Because if all those records are stolen, it equates to a certain cost for them from a breach standpoint. So we're going to look at that to understand the limit requirements. What limit should you have? But they're also going to use that data to understand what it could cost them as an insurance carrier. And then, you know, through that, they'll rate it to adjust the premium. So it can be a pretty complex process. If you're a really big company, we walk through that with folks. We sit down with all the different stakeholders within a company and get a really accurate picture of their cybersecurity posture.
Well, that's perfect. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
No, I think really the take-home message, if you get out of the insurance geek language, the cybersecurity risk is there. If you read the news, I think you can see it's there. It's not hype. It's not a myth. It is very much real. I've seen companies go out of business in less than a week after a breach.
Wow.
And it can be devastating for a company, for the products they make, the customers they serve, the employees that they serve. So I would just tell companies, you know, take the threat seriously. I think there's a far greater chance of a company having a cyber-related issue than there is being struck by a hurricane or a tornado. You know, we're constantly looking at what's the probability, what's the likelihood, what's the impact of certain risks. In this case, I feel the likelihood is a lot greater because there's a lot of threat actors out there. So do what you can to protect yourself, and insurance is a piece of that puzzle.
Well, certainly. And if someone wanted to get in contact with you, what would be the best way for them to reach out to you to start the discussion?
Yeah, I mean, they can email me at evan.taylor. That's evan.taylor@ nfp.com, which is National Financial Partners, nfp.com. Or they can call me, 704-927-7115, 704-927-7115.
Fantastic, Evan. Well, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. It was very informative to hear kind of everything, and especially with your background in the FBI, I'm sure what you saw there. And going into the insurance and knowing that there's a need out there is just fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity. And, yeah, we look forward to serving folks that have a need. So thank you.
Sounds great, Evan. Well, have a great one. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Robert.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.